Welcome to the Cold Coffee Club, a podcast brought to you by Houston Moms Blog. HMB is passionate about our community and the moms who live here, just like you. Our goal is to make this big city that we live in feel just a bit smaller. So we invite you to tune in every week to hear about all things motherhood, get a glimpse of the latest events, and all the fun activities happening around town. So go ahead, reheat that coffee, put your feet up, and join us as we cover the gamut of this crazy job we have all elected to take on and been blessed with, to be called mom.
Hi, it's Megan.
And Emily.
And we are thrilled to bring you the Cold Coffee Club podcast. Today, we are going to be talking all things infertility and fertility with Dr. Alexa Clapp, Director of Medical Ethics at the Houston Fertility Institute. But before we do all that, we're going to talk about all things HMB and Houston Moms Blog and everything that's happening in and around Houston. So make sure you head to our blog and check out our holiday event guide. There we have six different sections of things happening all around town. Everything from Santa sightings to fun runs to holiday performances and, of course, Christmas lights and holiday lights. So make sure you check out that awesome resource. And again, you can find it right on our homepage from our website at HoustonMomsBlog.com. Today, we are so excited to have Dr. Alexa Clapp and of Houston Fertility Institute and speaking to all things infertility and fertility. But before we got started with Dr. Clapp, I have Emily, as I mentioned before, and we have both been through the infertility journey. What I think is so amazing and unique about our platform at Houston Moms Blog is that we've both been able to to not only speak about it now, but write about it too. And there's an amazing amount of mamas across Houston who have gone through our journeys. And so we just thought we'd share a little bit about our journeys and what it took for us to get pregnant or not or what have you. So Emily, I know you have a story, so I'd love to hear kind of yours with...
Yeah, so my story involves sort of, I would say, about 6 months after my husband Oren and I got married. We started trying to have a family, and not much was going on. At that time, I think I was maybe like 28 or 29, and when I started going online to look about when I should come in, when I should be worried, yeah, at my age, they said to wait an entire year before coming in.
Good which times, right?
Seems like an eternity.
Thanks, Dr. Google.
Yeah, and I was like, a year, you know? So, you know, I listened and I kept trying and I read all the weird stories online about take this supplement and eat this and pineapple. Don't do this. And the most annoying thing I heard was... just relax and don't think about it so much and it'll happen. And I was like, well, I'm trying my best, but it's hard to really do that when you're in it and you want something so badly. And it was just very frustrating. And it got to a point where I knew something was up. So I ended up, I think maybe 9 months in, I contacted Dr. Haddad, actually. He, is the director at Houston Fertility Institute. And I went in for a consultation and we were just talking and he automatically discovered that I must have endometriosis because we talked about some pain that I was having during my menstrual cycles and I've sort of had it most of my, you know, adolescent life. Mm-hmm. And he said that's the first thing to look at. So we went through this whole thing where I went through a hysteroscopy.
Oh, that was good times, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so they, like, saw the endometriosis and they shaved off however many layers. And then he was like, okay, you're good. So, you know, maybe start trying whatever. Actually, I think he said because it can grow back so quickly, he recommended actually doing a treatment, whether it was intrauterine insemination, IUI,
okay,
or IVF. And so we tried the IUI. after, like, I healed or whatever.
Okay.
It was unsuccessful. So then we were starting to talk about IVF. And we did a round of IVF, or actually I think we were, like, beginning it. And I got pregnant spontaneously.
No
way. Which was, like, what? Like, it was, like, they were doing all these, you know, you have to go in, like, every day or every other day. And they're monitoring.
And they measure all the things, right?
And they're, like, taking your blood and whatever. So they saw, like, HCG in my blood, which is the pregnancy hormone. And so they're like, well, I think we need to stop this and see what happens. But they were like, you know, the levels are kind of low. So, you know, we're just going to be, like, hopefully cautious, I think is what they said.
Mm-hmm.
And anyway, it ended up not working out. It ended up being a non-viable pregnancy, and I was super upset. And then we decided to go back to the IVF stuff. This is all, this sounds like it's very quick, but it was, like, several months of time between letting your body heal, getting to the right levels of hormones.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So we tried IVF finally, and it was successful, but I lost that one as well. And that's when Dr. Haddad was wanting to go back to the drawing board because he said, something's going on. You should be pregnant by now. I don't understand, but I'm going to think about this. So he came back and he figured out, or he had a hunch that I had something called a uterine septum, which is essentially like scar tissue that lies in a woman's uterine area on the sort of the top of the uterine wall.
Okay.
And sometimes on the sides. But basically it's scar tissue that every female baby is born with that supposedly disintegrates as time goes on. But there are women that not all of it disintegrates, and that scar tissue causes the embryos to not be able to implant because it's just not impossible for them
whatever.
To implant. Yeah. So what usually it's very visible when you do something like a hysteroscopy, and he didn't see it when he was, you know, doing the whole endometriosis thing. So his hunch was that it was hiding behind my endometrial lining, and he wanted to go in and like see if that was
okay.
So anyway, I think they ended up doing like a laparoscopy this time, or I don't remember which.
Yeah.
I did like one laparoscopy and two hysteroscopies, and he was right. It was like he peeled back the lining and there was my scar tissue.
Oh my gosh.
And they took out the scar tissue and you know, I healed or whatever.
Uh-huh.
And I did IVF once again. And it was successful, and I had my son, Mayer, who is now 5 years old.
Oh, my gosh.
And he did say something like, this diagnosis goes undiagnosed 99.9% of the time. Because it's not visible to most doctors, it's not something
Can't see it. It's in their mind.
So, like, if it weren't for him, I probably wouldn't have children because it's one of those weird, rare, mysterious things that, you know, not many people have. So I feel really extremely lucky that he did think of it and found it and removed it. And my second child, Juliet, she was a spontaneous pregnancy, unexpected too. I got pregnant with her, I discovered that I was pregnant with her at my son's 1 year birthday mark.
Oh my gosh.
So they're actually only 21 months apart, but I was so thankful not to have to go through IVF again because I was preparing my brain for that for if we wanted a second child.
Sure.
That I was maybe going to have just because of everything my body had been through and if my endometriosis was growing back, I didn't know.
Yep.
So anyway, here I am with two children and so grateful, but the process was grueling. It was very lonely and emotional, and I felt like out of my group of people in my life, I was the only one going through it. It was just a very isolating feeling, and it was definitely a journey. So,
and now we have a 5 year old, and how old is Julia?
She's 3.5
She's
now.
3.5
Yeah. So
I love it.
Yeah.
Thank you for sharing your story with us.
And with you, you have twins.
Yes. So my journey looks a little different, which I think is what is interesting about infertility. Everyone has a different story. There's not like one perfect makeup. And so for me, I was having a ton of problems with ovarian cysts. I kept having them rupture, or I'd have to go have them removed. And I had multiple laparoscopic surgeries to get those taken care of. And finally, my OB said, and I think I was about the same age as you, like, mm-hmm. so 28-ish. She was like, we've got to get you pregnant so we can stop this. And then we were kind of in a point of kind of redemption and recovery in our marriage. And so we had only had 2 years or so where we had come to a really good place. And so we'd been trying, but not like, it was kind of like, yeah, it was like, if it happens, it happens. I wasn't tracking anything. But we weren't being careful either, right?
Yeah.
And so she said that, like, right before I went into the OR for, like, the fifth time or something. Ugh. And I was like, well, we kind of been trying, but I mean, kind of not, but kind of yes. And so it just struck a chord with me. And so we came out of recovery, and I was like, you know, I asked her, I'm like, do you think there's something happening here? She's like, I think you should probably be pregnant by now. So I told her that, you know, we had probably tried actively for 6 months or something, so approaching that 30 mark. And so she referred me to Houston Fertility. So met with them and went through all the standard testing of hormone levels. And we did the hysteroscopy and all of that good stuff.
Yeah.
Did you have the dye shoot thing?
Yes. What is that? What is that called?
We'll have to ask
Dr.
It's
like they shoot dye through your fallopian tubes,
yes,
to make
to
sure
see
it's clear.
No blockages.
Yeah.
And you feel like it's like fire running through your body for like
I just remember
about
having
a
to pee so badly because they make you fill
yes.
your bladder
oh,
up.
And your bladder, it has to
oh
be
my
so
gosh.
Full. And it's like, you have to have like a liter of water or something crazy
yeah.
in your bladder. And it's just the most amazing feeling ever. But so we went through all the testing. Everything came back great. Like the only thing that came up was when they did the hysteroscopy, they found a uterine growth. Mm-hmm. And they had to remove that. And they felt like it was kind of centralized. So if anything had tried to implant, it wouldn't have been able to because this thing was a fibroid tumor. That's what it was.
Oh, fibroid tumor.
Yeah. So I had a fibroid tumor that was kind of like chill in the middle of my uterus. So they took that out during the hysteroscopy. But still, they felt like that wasn't really the reason I wasn't getting pregnant. And they felt like I was ovulating and all of that. But they wanted to put me on Clomid to kind of speed up the process, I guess.
Yeah.
So they gave me a prescription for Clomid. And but they said, before you start the prescription, your husband needs to get tested. And I was like, oh, okay. I'm sure he'll enjoy that.
Yeah.
Like,
my husband
loved me.
He
so
was tested
much.
Too.
Yeah.
Because yeah. that's so, like the easiest way to
right.
start.
You just have to like, you have
cancel
to
that
rule
out.
That out.
Yeah.
Exactly. So we went and did the test. And I picked up the same day I picked up my prescription for Clomid from Walgreens. And I went to go fill it. No, I picked it up. I got a call from the doctors and they said, by the way, we know why you're not getting pregnant. And they said your husband's count is not even on the charts.
Really?
And so it just kind of blew our minds because that wasn't even on the radar, right? So
yeah.
we're thinking I have all the issues with my ovaries and everything that's happening there. So this was just a check on the list to get it done.
Mm-hmm.
And for that to come back, it was such a mind blower.
So unexpected.
Yeah. So I called him like, hey, we need a chat, my friend. And so this is what I've learned about infertility too. I mean, we think of it majority as a female issue.
Yeah. And that it's our fault.
And we can ask Dr. Clapp, I think 25% or something of can be cases with the guys, but it truly is like a couple thing. You know, there's no blame, there's no
yeah.
whatever. It's like an issue you have to deal with together. So
yeah.
just as a, I mean, it's no one's fault, right?
Right.
So Matt ended up going to a urologist for 6 months and doing some testosterone things to try to increase the counts. And he likes to call them his Navy SEALs. So they are small in number, but they're mighty because the ones that were actual swimmers looked good, but there just weren't very many of them. So they were a very elite troop.
Is that something that's like hereditary? But
you know, it's so random. It just, they don't know what caused it. Like, it used to be back in the day, I think it was like they would say mumps or measles or anything you would have, something like that. He didn't have any of that.
Yeah.
And so, and he's perfectly healthy, doesn't smoke, doesn't really drink heavily, worked out, was active, not overweight or anything like that. So very bizarre. We tried what we could with the urologist and they kind of worked hand in hand with Houston Fertility.
Mm.
And we took those 6 months and we decided to do a little bit of travel. And then we had decided that 6 month period was going to be when we would start IVF if it didn't work. And so we were trying to, you know, pray for the miracle, but preparing for the worst, I guess. So, you know, we may have been able to pay cash for the babies, but we ended up going in for the payment and we put them on a 0% interest credit card to get the points in the miles.
Uh-huh.
So we can like, we're like, at least we're going to get something out of this, right? So we started the in vitro process. Mm-hmm. And for us, we had to do ICSI, which is they have to like pick out the specific good sperm. So it's not like you let them just like go run into the petri dish.
Right.
You actually have to have them implant it into the petri dish.
Wow.
And
what's it called? Pixie?
ICSI.
ICSI.
Like I-C-S-I. It's,
okay.
We'll have Dr. Klepp say what it is, but I don't want to misspeak, but it stands for something.
Okay. That's interesting.
But yeah, it's a very specific method to do it. And
so like hand-picked sperm.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
That's exactly it. So they hand-pick these bad boys. And, you know, the whole rigmarole of, you remember all the shots and all the good stuff. And it was amazing. Then we went in, they implanted, and I remember them calling me Pupo, which P-U-P-O, pregnant until proven otherwise.
Oh.
So they implanted, and they gave me a choice because, you know, do you remember watching the embryos grow and they get to like certain sizes or what have you?
Right.
So for us, we had a handful that had developed really nicely.
Mm-hmm.
And
don't they grade them like A, B, C? Yeah.
Exactly. So we had like the top A, whatever it was. I don't remember if it was A, but we had the top grades. And so we decided to, they said right before, because we didn't know until that day that we showed up at the doctor's office how many had actually come to fruition.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, okay, do you want to do one or two? And I had literally about 10 minutes to decide.
Yeah.
So they could, you know, harvest them correctly or whatever. So we said two and figured I knew friends who had done ICSI and in vitro and had put in two and only had one baby.
One,
and
I was like, that happened with me too. With IVF, I chose two and one stuck. So.
Exactly. And so we kind of figured if we'd gone through all that, then whatever. So they put in two and I was Pupo. So we got the call around Halloween, if I remember correctly, and that I was indeed pregnant. So there was a lot of still testing after that and fun shots that we had to take to make sure the levels stayed where they were. We found out at about, I want to say it was like 6 weeks, that there was two. And
that's so exciting.
Yeah. And I remember Dr. Haddad looking over and he's like, I can't tell if you're excited. Because we knew it was a possibility, right?
Yeah.
And I know what I am. I'm actually
overwhelmed.
Like, yeah, I'm seeing two little heartbeats in there. And so we watched those babies pretty carefully. And then at 36 weeks gestation, which is the cool thing about in vitro, because you know exactly how many weeks and days you are, right?
There's so no guesswork involved.
I was 35 and 5, my friend. And so 35 and 5 had a twin boy and girl, Ryan and Quinn, and now they are almost 8 and a half and in second grade and playing sports and doing all that jazz. So
awesome.
Yeah. So you never know. But here came the Clanahan twins.
Well, we have Dr. Alexa Clapp here. She is the Director of Medical Ethics at Houston Fertility Institute. Dr. Clapp, welcome. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
We thought we would talk to you about sort of what the landscape of infertility and fertility looks like today. We were just discussing, Megan and I, how we've both had some experiences with infertility starting from the year 2010 and onward. So we're not sure like how things look now and wanted to sort of get your take on some of those things. So our first question for you is, really a statement. It seems to us that infertility is much more common than ever before. We're not sure if that's just a misconception because there are more solutions today that people are seeking than in the past, or is it true that infertility is much more common today than ever before?
So infertility, unfortunately, is a common problem. So 1 out of 8 couples faces it. And I think as, you know, couples age and decide to put off their child and bearing and family building till later in life, I think it's become more common. So in 2016, it was the first year where more first-time moms were in their 30s than in their 20s, which I think is a big difference. Okay. Uh-huh. Because technically our peak fertility time is in our 20s. So I think following that trend, infertility will become, you know, a more common problem for couples and for family building. But I also
strictly because of age.
Because of age, and people are deciding to put it off for careers, for social issues, decisions, personal decisions. Mm-hmm. I do think people talk about it more, which is helpful for couples to bring awareness to it, too.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Interesting. Okay. And I mean, So just to let you know, I turned it towards the latter. So I was like, I was probably 28 or 29. So I was kind of getting it. Emily was about the same age as well. So we weren't right out the gate.
Spring chickens.
Yeah. But I mean, for my group of friends, it was just something people really didn't talk about. So
and it seemed like in a group of friends, everyone else was just getting pregnant like that.
Yes. So I turned around and my friend was like, "It's like I think I'm going to get pregnant tonight."
Yeah.
And then
it's like they looked at each other and it happened.
Yeah. And I call them the fertile myrtles, right?
Yeah, right.
So everyone has their own journey. But I mean, with that, I know we were talking earlier for Emily and I, it was just such a, felt so lonely. Mm-hmm. And it's so emotional, especially you're going through all those tests where you're having all sorts of hormones pumped on you. So I'd love to hear from you. Like, I mean, clearly when couples come to you or women, and it's so emotional. So how do you kind of straddle that barrier of professionalism, but also you're a woman, you get it, like, and you know kind of their feeling of what they're going through. Exactly. And I'd love to kind of hear how that looks.
So I think I always tell patients the first step is the hardest step is just making an initial visit, I think. Mm. Because I don't think, I think we've gotten better in terms of support groups and friends and even celebrities and news covering the issue. I think there are still a lot of people that have no idea that it's as common as it is.
Yeah.
Or even just in general getting pregnant. You know, even a fertile couple chance of pregnancy every month is only 20-25%, which is not
really
that high.
Okay, yeah.
So I think infertility is extremely stressful process and having that diagnosis. It's an emotional roller coaster, financial roller coaster, and there are great successes, but there's also sometimes, you know, bumps in the road. So I think I always tell them you've done the hardest part, which is making an appointment and coming to speak to me. And I think making people feel comfortable and realize that they are not the only ones and it's a common problem.
Is that what you say to them? Like,
usually.
You usually say that this is pretty common.
I kind of we'll go over statistics just so at least they know it's more common.
Yeah.
And I'll usually at that first visit review their history and then review kind of the basic evaluation and what factors could be wrong. Mm-hmm. I think having a strong support system is key, and whether part of that comes from us and the nurses, because mm-hmm. when you're doing an evaluation and treatment cycle, you see us a lot.
Yes.
Yes.
They are frequent visits.
I feel like I lived there.
I know. Like, it's just like, come on a Saturday
You see us
morning.
More than
okay,
family. Exactly.
No.
Yeah.
So I feel like my staff does a very good job, too, of, you know, connecting with patients, and we go through the process with you. You know, we share in your joys and, you know, those times where it doesn't work.
Yeah.
So I think that's key. I think, you know, family and friends is important, mm-hmm. and any kind of outlet where you can minimize stress, whether it be exercise, massage, acupuncture.
Yeah. Well, and that's something, so that's funny that you mentioned acupuncture, because I remember, and then again, this was like 2009 mm-hmm. when I started in vitro, they were just kind of starting to talk more about acupuncture. Is that something that y'all are still actively discussing, or is it, I mean, what is the, I'm just curious. Like,
so it usually comes up because I think more patients are asking about it. And I always say, if it de-stresses your life a little bit, then it's completely worth it.
Okay.
Because we know stress plays a role, so.
And sometimes it's all mental, too. So if you believe that you're, something is helping you to relax and take some stress off, then that's all that matters.
True, true. Until, I mean, and I guess for me, the relaxation came with just, number one, accepting that it wasn't going to happen without intervention. And so once I accepted that, then I needed to relax. So those little, and I was telling Emily earlier, I was poopo is what the nurse called me, pregnant until proven otherwise. And so I just, but for then it became really important for me to relax, because now I have these two little embryos that are now little babies inside of me. And so I guess everyone has a different journey into that piece of what that looks like.
When couples have been trying to get pregnant for some time, what is the general rule currently on when they might need to come seek your help? Because when I was trying, mm-hmm. when I asked or looked online, I was like 27, 28. They said I needed to wait an entire year before coming in, which felt way, way, way too long for something that I wanted now, you know? I did it. I'm good at following directions.
But you have to be to do infertility treatments. By the way, you must follow directions.
Right.
Very important.
Yes. But I'm curious to know if that's changed at all. I know it's sort of based on age again, too. Like,
correct.
When so you need to come in. But
there are kind of infertility guidelines in terms of meeting that diagnosis. So typically under 35, we say a year. Over 35, it does shorten down to 6 months. Or if you're older, even a little bit sooner. And that's because we know as we get older, since women are born with the number of eggs we have, our ovarian function goes down. But also it's important for patients to realize that there are other situations where they should see a doctor earlier. So if someone has irregular menstrual cycles or has previously been given the diagnosis of polycystic ovary syndrome, which will commonly present with irregular cycles, they are not going to be ovulating on a regular basis. So then it's difficult and frustrating for them to time intercourse or like, you know, they may not even have cycles without medication.
Yeah.
So for those couples and those women, I would recommend they come in much earlier.
Okay.
Same thing if they had had, you know, for some other reason, another surgery and they know something's wrong with their fallopian tube or.
Okay. So when they call, they're like, they can just make a consultation. Yeah. And if you feel like maybe they're not a candidate at this time, you'll be like, okay, you need to peace out for another 6 months or whatever.
Exactly. Then anybody can make an appointment. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we view sometimes those as preconception
appointments, which are also important because, you know, we can check kind of basic vitamin D levels, thyroid, but also screen you for genetic carrier syndromes, make sure that you're on prenatal vitamins with folic acid.
Yeah.
We can even talk about timing
intercourse. So you like set them up for the best success.
Correct. And then hopefully some of those, they may get pregnant and then they don't even need to come back.
Yeah. Those would be the best, right?
That would be.
I mean, so we were chatting earlier and I know you don't know my history yet, but so my husband, we went through all this stuff. I had had ovarian cyst and all of these things. And then I had a fibroid tumor removed. But what we found out is my husband was actually, I guess, clinically infertile. And so it got us thinking, and I can't remember the exact statistics that people used to say, but I don't feel like people talk about husband, like
the male,
male infertility as much, and whether it's a male thing or a pride thing or what have you. Thankfully I have a very secure man who allows me to chat about it. So what do you see in the practice of, I mean, because obviously we have to test for everything, right? So what So what do y'all see, like percentage wise, of that being a contributing factor to infertility?
So solely male factor infertility can be upwards of 20-30% of the cases. A lot of times we'll find a combination of issues, male and female etiology.
Okay.
So most definitely, the semen analysis is a key part of that initial evaluation.
And one of the easiest things, right?
Correct.
Yeah.
I have stories. I mean, I have stories. I will say my husband was a huge trooper through that whole process. And I think after that, they got some better magazines. So
yeah.
it is what it is. I mean, you do what you need to do to have a baby and a kid. And it was something we were committed to. So from that standpoint, when you're committed to something, I mean, we both wanted kids. It was something Emily and I both, I mean, it was just something we were willing to sacrifice everything for, but it's a legitimate financial
investment.
Expense. Yeah. It's like, I mean, I remember thinking, okay, it's almost like I'm like starting the college fund before the child is like born, you know what I mean? And so we're just contributing to that. So how do you guys at Houston Fertility assist with kind of wrapping your heads around what that investment looks like? And then are there any, I guess, assistance that you offer financially to kind of ease that burden?
Right. So after the first initial consult, you will have a dedicated financial counselor. So they can either contact you by phone or you could set up a meeting at one of the offices.
Okay.
So the nice thing about having so many offices is that hopefully one is close to you.
Yeah. And y'all have 12 now, right?
Correct.
Okay.
Correct. So at that initial consult, they'll go over kind of what your insurance covers and really focus at that initial visit maybe more on testing evaluation. So when we're checking the fallopian tubes, the sperm.
Yeah, you're remembering
right,
all of that.
Exactly. Like, the ovarian
the
reserve.
Green dye was amazing.
Yeah. So, and then later on, they'll touch base after we kind of put everything together and we recommend treatment in terms of intrauterine insemination or IVF, in vitro fertilization, and they'll come up with a treatment plan. They'll be able to explain to you what your insurance covers, what it doesn't.
I was going to say about insurance, at that time, our insurance wanted nothing to do with helping with this. I know now many do.
Correct. So most will cover the testing workup. Where some of them differ is treatment coverage.
Mm-hmm. What would you say changed their minds on helping with that? I mean,
I think more people are talking about it and it's much more of a common issue. And I think, you know, certain advocacy groups are making a big push for more coverage.
Mm-hmm.
With certain states maybe doing better than other states. So I think that is helpful. With the financial counselor, too, they can also talk to you about different financing options that will be available. So hopefully couples will have a treatment option. Correct.
Absolutely. 0% baby for 12 months.
I mean, I feel like when you're that age, you have to get help from somewhere.
Exactly.
You know,
we hadn't been, I mean, I think, you know, Matt was in the workforce for maybe 6 or 7 years at that point.
Yeah.
I mean, so there's not a whole lot of time to...
And most likely y'all bought a house and that was your main investment for that.
Girl, I just need to buy a couch. I wasn't looking... I was just not expecting to do in vitro. I mean, something that blew my mind. Right. But I was so grateful. I mean, and this is truly sincere, like, to land in a place like... Houston Fertility, and I can tell you, Vanessa was my nurse. And if Vanessa, if you're listening, she's still there. Aww. Oh my gosh. Oh, I'm gonna cry now. sincerely, when you talk about the staff that kind of takes you on the journey, they are people you don't forget because they are the most warm, most sincere people.
Compassionate.
Yes.
So.
They get
it. They empathize with you. And
correct. And they're invested in your success, too. We love seeing, you know, we love calling patients with that positive pregnancy test or the graduation visits or seeing you come back or get baby pictures.
The graduation visits. Yeah. Oh, that just like, remember when you graduated to your OB? They're like, you're released. And I was like, oh. No, but no, I don't want to be because I like it here.
Yeah, 12 weeks, right? When you're 12 weeks pregnant, you're done.
Yes. Well, then that also meant the end of the progesterone oil shots. Do y'all still do those?
Yes.
I think so. Oh. So we haven't quite come as far as we thought. I had those lumps from.
Welts.
Oh, they were just, I don't think I'll ever forget that pain. I think I still had them after even I gave birth. Like,
yeah, it was still turned into like a hardened kind of knot.
Yeah.
That never went away.
So we got some babies, but we got a little lumpy rear.
The things we do, right?
It's okay. So truly, what y'all do, I think, is amazing. And that has to prompt me to ask, like, what made you get into this line of work? I mean, because it is so emotional and there is a lot of hand-holding. Exactly. And so you have to, like, be mentally prepared to do that hand-holding too, right?
Exactly. So I decided to go into OBGYN initially because I think I love women's healthcare. I have a mom and a stepmom who are both really strong women, and taking care of women like them, I think, is amazing. And then when I went into OBGYN, I wasn't really sure what I wanted to do. I actually thought about doing GYN oncology with cancer. And after the first month, I was like, no way. This is not my thing. And actually encountered a very good mentor when I was in residency in the field of REI and just fell in love with it. I think it's extremely rewarding. And I think you form, you know, a connection and relationship with patients unlike any other specialty.
Oh, for sure.
I'm just so glad you came to talk to us.
What a privilege. I mean, seriously. And I think what you guys are doing over there is fantastic. And there are so many moms right now who need to hear this message that it is okay. And I love what you said the first time, that you did the hardest thing by making the appointment.
It's like you accepted that there's an issue and you want to get it looked at.
Or confirmation that it might be okay to be carrying on. Like, that there is something you can look at. And I think that's what's cool is moms really have, or hopeful moms have, and that's at their grasp now. Like, we can take control.
There's a lot of options.
There is a control thing that comes in where you don't have to just throw it up and leave it to the universe, right?
Correct. And I think that's the most frustrating thing, I think, for infertility. Yeah. Because no matter how hard you want it, no matter how hard you work, there's just, it's a little bit out of your hands.
Yeah.
But I think too all the time about like two generations ago, like my grandparents, you know, if they couldn't have a baby, they couldn't have a baby.
Like, there was that.
There was no science. There was no research. There was no, let's try this solution, you know. And I just feel so lucky to be living in the time that I live in, that, you know, your institute, like, made my dreams come true. And that's possible.
You're gonna make me cry. Girl.
And I feel, you know, like, I can't imagine living in a different time when... That's something you just have to accept and move forward with your life. And yeah.
Yes. If you all could see my face right now, I would be crying. But I look at the pictures of Emily's kiddos, and they're precious, and thinking of not dropping my second graders off at school today is unimaginable to me. I don't remember life before them. And that sounds so cliche, right? Like, moms always say that. It's mostly because we're really, really freaking
just
tired.
So involved with those two.
We're really tired. But it has been worth, it was worth every shot, every
lump.
Every lump.
Every blood draw.
Every test. And there's a lot. But so moms, if y'all are listening to this, and if Houston Moms Blog can be a support to you for that, we have plenty of resources online. My story is online. Feel free to look it up. Emily, I can't remember. Have we put yours up yet?
I don't know if I actually published it with HMB. Okay. I mean, but now you know my story.
Yeah. So, and of course, after this, we're going to have all the links for Houston Fertility and how to get in touch with them, because I think that's a great place to start if you are wondering what's going on in your fertility journey. And we didn't even get into second infertility, which is a whole other ballpark. If you're having trouble with having that second or that third, it's a real thing, y'all. And that's something worth investigating too. So we're here thinking of you and encouraging you to do that. And we so appreciate you tuning in. Thank you so much.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. No, this is great. I think if anybody feels more comfortable about, you know, seeking a consultation, then it's completely worth it. And knowing that they're not the only ones struggling.
Definitely not.
I think theme of today would be you're not alone, right?
Right.
So thank you, Dr. Klebb. So I encourage all of y'all to visit the Houston Fertility Institute website. It is www.hfi-ivf.com to find out more about how you can set up a consultation, get kind of that peace of mind, or have a plan in front of you. And like we said earlier, there's 12 locations Houston-wide. And so hopefully there should be one close to you. So we appreciate y'all tuning in, and we encourage you again to check out Houston Fertility Institute. Grateful for Dr. Klebb being here today. Thank you.
Thank you.
So until next time, we encourage you to make sure you're following Houston Moms Blog, as well as we have a great community and conversation group. So if you have any questions, especially regarding this podcast or other things that we're discussing on the blog, that's a great place to ask questions, get answers. And then, of course, we're on social media. Make sure you're following us on Instagram, Pinterest, Twitter, and LinkedIn. Until next time, we'll see you around Houston.
You have been listening to the Cold Coffee Club, brought to you by Houston Moms Blog. We wish you a fabulous week with your family and look forward to sharing many more cups of cold coffee with you.